What's up, everyone? Welcome back to The Kill Shot. This is UFC Fight Night Aspinall versus Tybura. We're breaking it down for DraftKings fantasy purposes. And with me, as always, the dream team, Sniper, Monk Maddox. We got the numbers. We got the breakdowns. We got it all. We got a good card. Let's jump right into it. But we were just saying last week was a really interesting card where there was a loser in the nuts lineup.
And in our contributors, Vince, so I have to give a shout out to Vince right before the podcast. I did a shout out kind of. I just dropped my VIP article. I'll give a plug there for our members. And I said, hey, guys, what do you think the top two fights to target are? And Vince jumps right on it, ruins all the fun, gets it with the first guess. And he was on Hafez last week, who was on the nuts even with the loss. Like, and he's got a full cheat sheet up, just like the rest of us do over at DFS Armies. Make sure you guys are checking that out. So shout out to Vince. Nice call last week on Hafez. So even though you got he felt like he was robbed of the decision, which he wasn't, but still ended up on the optimal. So it works out all around.
It also, you know, Vince's call got all of us off of JDM and paying up. It was the fade of JDM call, the Hafez call. I picked Marabuena Silva to win. I bet Marabuena Silva to win. That was the only that was the only bet I made on the card, which turned out to be good. That was the only bet. And I was like, I can't find any dogs. I was like plus money, and I'm like, I can't find any dogs. I do have a couple of plays I like on this card, so we'll get into that as well. But let's get right into it. Aspinall versus Marcin Tybura. Aspinall coming off of an injury. He is minus 460 to win, with Tybura coming back at plus 360 at the moment. The very important fight ends inside the distance prop is a solid minus 1,000. That's right. You heard me correct. This fight is minus 1,000 to end inside the distance. That's insane. Aspinall can do it all, but he's a grappler. He's averaging 4 takedowns per 15 minutes. He's landing 7 strikes per minute. Monk, this is DraftKings gold. 5 rounds?
Yeah, 100%. I love Tom Aspinall. At 9,700 this week, I mean, his ceiling is almost, you know, over 120 points, averaging almost 110 per win. And yeah, you said it. He's a grappler, man. In, 32% of his total fight time he spent inside the distance. He controls 99.65% of that, scores almost 10 points a minute from inside the distance, 6.3 overall. I mean, there's nothing I don't like about this. You know, as long as the knee is going to hold up and he's confident in it, which I assume he is, then I don't see why this is not a comeback fight for Aspinall. I mean, I don't know how much of a chance I give Tybura, but it's not going to be much. I mean, Aspinall's 30. Tybura is probably getting close, you know, closer to the end of his career. He's almost 38, you know, in a couple months. I know heavyweights tend to fight longer, you know, fight as they get older as well compared to the other divisions. But for DraftKings, I mean, the guy's averaging 83 points per win in his last 5, less than 2.5 points a minute. I'm not too interested here. I think Aspinall hopefully should be able to have his way and get it done early. I don't see how this one goes past, I don't know, 7.5 minutes, to be honest. I love Aspinall early here, and I like him for DraftKings.
Well, the only thing about it going more than 7.5 is Tybura's his last 3 fights have all gone the entire way. And I am a slight tinge concerned about the Aspinall ring rust. Is he going to be a little hesitant, get his feet under him, and kind of take his time before moving in? That's the only concern there. I will say this fight, I teased the contest I did in VIP. This was not in the top 2. There are some monster fights to target. There's also big salaries to consider here. There's some more live dogs. So in terms of overall fights to target, I don't want that much Tybura. There's only so much Aspinall you can jam in at 9,700. Though I don't think I'm going to let Aspinall beat me. I'll be field, but it's not. You can't go all in this fight. You won't be able to build enough lineup. So I like Aspinall as well. I have that little tinge of worry and concern, but you don't have to stack this in cash this week with 15 fights.
No
and
stack.
Tybura. Yeah, so like it. There's a couple of spots I'm actually really excited about. I can't give a hot take and pick against Tybura. I will say, I don't think I'm not going to X Tybura out of my pool because the dude is 11-6 in the UFC. He's been around a long time. We've totally discounted him in fights before that he's come back to win. I don't think anybody picked him to beat Sergey Spivak. I don't think so. He took down Spivak twice in that fight. Like, there's so many spots where we've buried Tybura and he's come through that I'm the what, the 5 to 6% it's going to take for me to be, you know, not let him destroy me. I'll be, I mean, that's interesting. We have a really heavy underdog in the main event. What do you guys think his ownership is going to be? I think he's going
to
be,
it'll be more than 5 or 6. He'll probably be like 10 to 12% owned.
That's pretty low for a main event fighter.
Yeah, but he deserves to be that. Listen, Tabura's wins are against mediocres. And he loses against like better than mediocre guys. And I'm not saying he's losing even to good guys. He's losing to Augusto Sakai, Shamil Abdurakhmadov, Alexander Volkov. He's losing to guys who are like decent. Like, he's more of a gatekeeper for me. I don't see any way outside of Tom Aspinall busting his knee again or an eye poke or some other stupid thing like that. The 5% variance of an injury or something crazy going on. There's no way that to me, Tabura is winning this fight. Straight up, because Aspinall's just better than him at everything, and bigger and better across the board. And and Tabura doesn't have KO power. He's not a finisher. All right. Second fight of the night. My girl, Molly Meatball McCann, here to give a beating to Yulia Stolarienko. Molly Meatball -210. Yulia is +180 in this fight, and the very interesting fight ends inside the distance is a surprisingly high -180.
Why is that surprising?
Because you don't see women's fights like this where they're minus money to end inside it. It's surprising. It is surprising. What else is surprising for me is the line, I think, is too tight on Meatball. She should probably be closer to -300 in this matchup, in my humble opinion. Yulia is just what, armbar or bust? Like, she is close to a zero. So, Sniper, how do you see this one going down?
You stole it. Armbar or bust. I'll give away some of the hard hitting, and you know, you break down 15 fights a week over and over again. I slip in some little gems for our members, and somebody called me out on this one that they found particularly funny a little while ago. That, look, Yulia Stolarienko is wet, dirty ass. She's terrible. Molly Meatball is just slightly drier ass. She's not good.
I love Molly. I
love her, but come on.
I'm not standing.
I made so much money off of the Erin Blanchfield line. It was great. She is, look. She's not that good, but she's entertaining. She's fun. She's a UFC level fighter. She's probably a lower level, and just her personality and where she's from kind of elevates a little bit. Not take anything away from her. In terms of liking Molly Meatball, I like Molly Meatball. I just don't think she's particularly good, and that's why I wanted to pause. But Stolarienko is just armbar or bust. That's all it is. And Meatball is the reason why that line is for Inside the Distance is so high. Because Meatball throws plenty of volume. She can take her down. Just be careful. She swarms. She's aggressive. She's going to try and get her out of there. And I see, you know, when I watch Stolarienko, there's some quit in there. If she doesn't land an armbar, I can totally see her looking for a way out and just getting ground and pounded out of there. I do think Molly Meatball is going to finish her. I'm hoping, you know, ever since Stolarienko pulled off the armbar of Jessica Rose Clark, like, I was like, okay, when do I fade this girl?
What has Jessica Rose Clark done? You know,
yeah. Immediately after that, do you remember we all made money fading Stolarienko against Chelsea Chandler? Chandler, we just watched last week, run into the octagon the wrong fucking direction, start Stolarienko and got her out of there in the first round. You're telling me Meatball can't do that? Give me Molly Meatball. Stolarienko is, yeah, I got other dogs I want to invest in. I would say I would throw a couple shares of Stolarienko for the armbar or bust potential if we didn't have 15 fights to look at.
Yeah, I agree. I can't believe a few things about this fight. First of all, how is this the co-main event? What Sniper said, I mean, this is like a low-level women's MMA fight. This has no place being the fourth. I don't care if it's in her back fucking yard.
They love the meatball in London.
Her mom is... Well, I shouldn't talk like this about a UFC title holder. I'm sorry. I do apologize for that.
I love that.
But yeah, this is insane. The second insane thing is, you better wait till weigh-ins before you start building lineups. Yulia Stolarienko passed out on the scale at a 135 match. She failed to make weight, I think, by 4.5 pounds at another 135 match. And now she's trying to fight at 125 for the first time in her career. I am 98% sure this fight does not happen. If it does, it's probably Molly McCann. I am not interested normally in paying $9,400 for someone like Molly Meatball McCann. But Stolyarenko's terrible. This could end in the first round, and then you're going to want Molly in your lineups, possibly. I'm still doubtful that she can score enough points to really pay off that extremely high salary. But I agree, Stolyarenko is definitely worth a dart throw if she can make it to the scale. I would honestly be shocked if she weighs in less than 130. Like, I don't know how this is going to happen. So, yeah, a dart throw for Stolyarenko. And, yeah, McCann, I mean, she'll probably take the fight if Stolyarenko weighs 130, but much more than that, they'll probably cancel it. And I just think she's way too excited. I'd rather roster Tom Aspinall. I'd rather pay up $300 for a hopefully first, second round, you know, early second round, high volume, couple takedown finish than I would Molly McCann at 94.
But watch that ownership. That's my only, it's my thing. But you had something, you know, let's have a little fun because this fight was really quick. You said this fight shouldn't be the co-main event. Totally agree. What would you make the co-main?
I was trying to look at that too. I would put, Nathaniel Wood and Feely could be fun. That's an option. Theron Murphy, no. There's not a ton. You'd have to get an English fighter, a European fighter, and there's not a lot of options here. So I understand why they did it, but I still don't like it.
Give me Paul Craig and Andre Paul Craig.
That was the one. That was the
one. A fun-ass fight, a Scottish fighter, and then you got Muniz who broke Jacare's arm. I could watch that replay.
Exactly. That'd be way better than this one.
Anyway, we're almost at that fight too.
The pick across the board is the meatball.
Yep.
I think for, again, personally, she's playable in DFS. She could win in the first round, and I love the number for your parlay pieces. So assuming that Yulia does fight and this fight does happen, minus 200, I'm throwing this in parlays because I think she's got DraftKings, UFC is, they want Molly to win in London. Like this is designed for the crowd to go wild. That's what this fight was put together for. They didn't put this together to build up Mrs. Seven losses in a row, Stolyarenko. She's there just for one reason.
Just like they wanted Blanchfield to win in New York, by the way. Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. All right. Next up, the aforementioned Nathaniel Wood, minus 200, taken on Andre Feely at plus 170 odds. The fight goes the distance, is a solid minus 200, meaning that they are expecting this one to go the distance. Nate Wood has been a high volume striker. He does everything you want, landing over 6 strikes per minute, almost 2 takedowns per 15, decent takedown defense, good, solid all-around fighter, taking on like a slightly less good, solid all-around fighter in Touchy Feely. Sniper, how do you see this one going down?
This is a dog I'm interested in, and I'm actually going to pull the trigger here. Nathaniel Wood is a good prospect. I think he needs to be able to mix in the wrestling to have success. He took down Charles Jourdain 5 times. Charles Rose is a terrible striker, and he won that fight. You know, he lost the fight against Casey Kenney, where he wasn't a better grappler. When he's not a better wrestler, he has trouble. That's why he lost against John Dodson. Andre Feely is a good counter wrestler. He comes out of that Team Alpha Male camp. He's been around a long time. I know he's pretty much alternated wins and losses almost his whole UFC career. He beat Bill Algeo last time out, who I think we all agree is pretty legit. Close fight, split decision, but a good fight. Yeah, he got finished by Joanderson Brito, but Brito was a problem. And his takedown defense is at 70%, and it's that low because Bryce Mitchell got him down 7 times. I don't think that Nathaniel Wood is as good of a wrestling grappler as Bryce Mitchell, and he needs to lean on it. I don't think he'll be at the level to take Feely down, and because of that, I start getting real concerned about Nathaniel Wood. I know Monk will give us the scoring numbers, but scrolling through, just looking at Wood's raw stats real quick, he can't be that high of a score, even though he does wrestle. I don't think he puts up a ton of points. Looking real quick, he's got a couple finishes in here, so it might be decent. Either way, though, I actually like Feely to use his counter wrestling just to keep it on the feet, make it a close fight on the feet, and steal. Really, I'm kind of thinking it's going to be a greasy decision for Andre Feely. So while I do like him, I really like him. I was going to say for cash games, but minus 200 inside the distance, probably a little bit shady. There's a couple other spots I'm looking at. But he's really cheap in terms of super punts. He's probably the guy I'm looking at to punt down there. And I think he wins this fight. I think that the English fans are going to have to ramp up for Aspinall and McCann after a little bit of a letdown here, though. I like the veteran in Andre Feely, unless Nathaniel Wood's wrestling has gotten better, which it could. He's, you know, he is 6-2 in the UFC, but until he can beat somebody without wrestling, I need to see it before I pick it.
Yeah, I agree. This is definitely a spot that I'm interested in the underdog. I think the line is maybe not too wide as far as betting goes. I mean, maybe it is, but for DraftKings purposes, I think it is too wide. I just think Andre Feely at 7K has a lot of potential value here against a guy who, you know, he has finished a few fights. Let's see. Actually, he has put up rather 100 points in three of his six wins. That's what I was trying to say. No first round wins, however, for Nathaniel Wood. So I think Feely really has an opportunity to score decent here. He does overall score 4 points a minute inside the distance. Nathaniel Wood is about 5.24. Doesn't allow a ton, but I just have a hard time seeing Nathaniel Wood paying off this salary, 9,200 this week against a guy, like you said, that has 18 fights at the promotion and who's still game for a good fight. I mean, he hadn't looked great recently. Well, I was going to say two in a row, but he had a no contest sandwich there in the middle with Daniel Pineda, but he lost to Brito in the first minute. That was kind of shocking. And then the Bryce Mitchell loss you mentioned, but he rebounded very nicely against a very good guy, in my opinion, Bill Algeo. So I think Feely's still here. He's still relatively young at 33 years old, a ton of experience. And I agree. I might be picking Andre Feely straight up, but I'll definitely have more of him rostered than Nathaniel Wood. I might throw Wood in some cash lineups, but I think there's other options there at 9,200 is a little bit much for me, but I think a lot of potential value on Feely this week.
Yeah. I have to just go back for a second. Sorry, Geek, that the fight to go to decision is -200. I don't know if I heard, I heard it backwards, and that's why I was fumbling in that part. So Feely becomes a good, that's why he was in my initial cash build. For that reason,
I didn't understand what you were
judges. Yeah, I misheard you. I was like -200 inside the distance. Did I read that wrong? And you like, I think I heard it wrong. So I totally, go,
yeah.
I was like, what the fuck? But so I looked it up while you were talking. I'm like, okay, no, I was right. So I have to go back. Feely is probably my favorite cash game punt by, you know, I had to amend what I said earlier, which amends what I wrote up because I misheard Geek. I think you're fucking with me.
Totally, totally makes sense as a cash play. Feely wins. He cannot put his stamp on wins anyway. So like, even when he's winning, it looks close. You can't tell. And you know, if you're betting, this guy goes to split decision all the time. That's just how Feely fights. He's just that kind of guy. You know, we've seen these style of fighters before. And when he wins, it's a split. When he loses, it's usually close. He's going to go to the distance. He'll get a couple takedowns along the way. So I think a great cash punt. And I think it probably goes to the judges. And, you know, listen, it's in London, and your guess would be they'll probably lean for the hometown boy. But you never know. You never know with these judges. And with the touchy Feely fight, you know, it's split. It's one side. It's the other side. You want to take your shot on that in cash. Sub 7K or at 7K on DraftKings. You know, at that super cheap price, that sub 7K level. You don't even need to win. We saw it last week. The winner of that fight, you didn't need a winner. You just needed a cheap guy who put up a 50. I think you can get Feely here. Although I will say there are some fighters, there is better odds, line odds value as we go down, because the rest of these fights are super close lined, or most of them are. And so you start to see like some $7,200 types that are like +150. So there are some better odds value plays coming up. All right, here we go. Coming up next, we have got Paul Craig taking on Andre Muniz. Muniz -210 is the favorite. Come back on Paul Craig, +180. This fight is super likely to end inside the distance, lining at -260 to end inside the distance. So a couple grapplers here. You know, a lot of times with Paul Craig, he wants to get it to the ground. Like, hey, number one, we have to mention Paul Craig moving down to 185 for this fight. That could be interesting because he's not a small 205er.
No.
So down at 185, that could be interesting. Maybe the power comes through a little bit more. I don't know. He's not the worst striker in the world. I actually don't think he's that bad of a striker. Like, I think he's improved in that area, but he tends to get his wins off his back by submission. I know that Muniz will most definitely be willing to go into grappling with Paul Craig. Muniz is famous for submitting Jacare Souza, right? So can he out grapple Craig? That's a question that we're going to answer right now. Sniper, can he out grapple Craig?
100% Paul Craig needs to not fuck around on the ground with
he's definitely going to fuck around on the ground.
I'm not sure. He's got that awkward kickboxing style. Like I said, I actually think he has a striking advantage on this in this fight. He's really long. He uses that awkward kind of those front kicks. He can keep it range. Maybe he uses counter wrestling. You're right. He probably does, and that's why I had to pull the trigger on Andre Muniz as the pick here. I do look like this fight to target. I will say I think people are going to over target this fight though, because I see a little bit of caginess here in that. I think at least initially, I think Craig is not going to want to mess around with Muniz on the ground. I think he's going to keep his distance, get his range at 185, use some of those kicks, be a little bit cagey. And we might see some of that grappling in this. I think he's going to start grappling when he gets hit, because that's just instinctively what these fighters do. You get hit and you go back to what your base is. I think he's going to be looking pretty good until he gets hit. And then I think we'll end up in one of these grappling exchanges, and Andre Muniz probably gets a finish from there. It'll be interesting to see if Muniz tries to shoot, how he deals with the front kicks. Like you said, Paul Craig is a big guy for this division. You would think that's going to give him an advantage in the grappling. It also means he's more likely to gas out later in the fight. I think this sets up for a Muniz finish. I think it sets up for more like a second round finish, though. And I know we're splitting hairs, but we're talking about, I'll pull it up real quick one more time, we're talking about 9,300. You have to start comparing Muniz against Meatball Molly and Tom Aspinall, just $400 more. I can make some case for guys a little bit cheaper than him. And I think the ownership is going to be pretty elevated. So I would say I like the fight. I'm picking Muniz. I think Paul Craig is definitely a live sub 7K dog, though, because for everything you said, Muniz is not a good striker. He can, you know, they're a pass for Paul Craig, but a guy who broke Jacare's arm and submission versus submission guy. While I can make those points for Paul Craig, why you shouldn't fade him, I can't not pick Andre Muniz in the grappling. Because I think he gets it down once, and I think he wins.
Yeah, I like it. I think the ownership is going to be high, but I think it is warranted here. I mean, these guys, 60% of Muniz's UFC wins are in the first round. 50% of Craig's wins are in the first round. 2/3 of his losses are also in the first round. Just tons of opportunity for an early first or a first round or early second round finish. And that's also what I am targeting here. I love Muniz. I think the ownership is probably warranted. It does worry me. This isn't like Stolyarenko going down 10 pounds or going from lightweight to featherweight or something like this is 20 freaking pounds, man. 20 pounds. Paul Craig has never fought in this division. There's a couple fighters this week that are making some very interesting weight class changes that I'm not really understanding, but things haven't been going their way. We'll talk about one of them later on. We already talked about Julia. Paul Craig is the third here. Very diverse striker. Only 51% of his strikes landed to the head, 31% to the body, and the rest to the legs. So I don't mind that as far as someone mentioned his kickboxing style. But, man, it has been depressing being a Paul Craig fan and watching him fight in the past two fights. Just these – he goes for these half takedowns and then just rolls to his back like a weeble wobble. And if you don't follow him down, he has literally no chance, and you just rain down bombs from above. I think Muniz will be able to, A, do that. And if he does go to the ground, he should be able to stay safe and just rack up all of the control time minutes before he eventually finds a sub or a finish, in my opinion. So I love Muniz here, and I do think Craig is a decent play as well, because he's so cheap, and that salary performs fantastically. 85% optimal in wins is the 69% or the $6,900 salary. So I love both sides. I'll be over the field probably on both of them, man. I mean, I don't know how I couldn't be here. I might take some lumps for that, but it's all right. I'm fine with it. I think somebody gets finished early.
Yeah, do not ignore Paul Craig on this card. I'm not going to go so far as to make a win prediction for Craig, but I lean in it. I do think they will grapple, and that's where Paul Craig wants to fight. So, you know, he's going to fuck around, and we're going to find out, because he's going to go to the ground with Muniz. And you know what? I feel like this Jacare submission thing is overblown. Jacare was kind of washed at that point in his career anyway. I don't know. I feel like it's overblown. So I'm taking my shots on Paul Craig a little bit. Do not ignore him, but obviously Muniz will get easy takedowns, lots of grappling points, and if he wins, I think he's going to score really well. So both sides, I agree with you, Monk. Both sides really, really good here. All right, next up, we got Jai Herbert taking on Fares Ziam. With Ziam coming in at minus 155 and the comeback on Herbert plus 135. The fight ends inside the distance plus 105. So another fight that's kind of leaning towards going to decision. Now, the stats are a little bit misleading on this fight, so I want to bring it up because they are misleading. Okay, when you look at the stats for Ziam, you know, it shows under one takedown per 15 minutes. So you're like, is this guy a grappler? I'm not sure. You look at Jai Herbert. He can't stop a takedown. That is his ultimate weakness. He's at 52% takedown defense. And so whenever I see Jai Herbert in a fight, I'm like, oh, is this guy a wrestler? I want to know. That's my first thought because Herbert can't really counter wrestle. That's when he loses fights. So when you dive in a little bit to Ziam's fight history, I mean, he had 3 takedowns in his last fight, so he does know how to do it. And then you look at who he fought prior to that, and Jamie Mullarkey just out grappled him. He fought Don Madge, who's primarily a grappler. So basically, Ziam's fight history, and then he had a Terrence McKinney fight where he was just able to reverse and get a rear naked choke, or he got choked out by McKinney early. So not much there. So as you look at this guy's fight history, it does not appear that he's like a heavy grappler, but in his most recent fight, 3 takedowns, and you look at the other opponents, and there is solid excuses for why he wasn't able to execute any grappling. Now we got Jai Herbert. I think Fares Ziam can grapple here, and I just expect that to happen and him to get a win over Jai Herbert, which might score well because of grappling. Sniper, what do you say?
Kind of the same. But I think he's also the better striker, and I think that's what he's better at. I think he's going to keep it on the feet and just kind of and piece up Herbert. I've never been especially high on Herbert. This is kind of one of those fights that there's just 15 fights in the card. I think there's better spots. Yeah, there's some upside here. Not much interest in Herbert because I don't think he's that good, and there are dogs I'm picking straight up who have potential to break the slate. I said it a few times in my article. Even if the dog wins, do they have slate-breaking potential? I don't really think Herbert does regardless, so I'm not that interested. I'll play some Fares Ziam. I think he's better everywhere. I think he ends up outstriking. Maybe he gets a finish along the way. Like, he's live for the optimal, whereas I just have such a hard time seeing Herbert getting there. And there's, you know, typically, because you alluded to it earlier, 15 fights in the car, we get some interesting odds value spots. And yeah, you got a little bit of odds value point per dollar here in Herbert, but you're going to get some better ones later where the line is a little bit cheaper and it's like 5-10 cents. Like it's going to get even better. So give me Fares Ziam. It's not in a fight I'm especially excited about. I think he outclasses Herbert pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, most likely. But there's the one thing, you know, we saw what Herbert did when he did connect against Ilya Topuria. What are you going to do, right? I know Ilya moved up 10 pounds in that one. Fares Ziam has not been knocked down as of yet in his UFC career. I just, like you said, I think there's other places you can look. You're going to have to ignore the fights or ignore the stats here if you want to roster Ziam. He's averaging 70 points a win. He did look decent against Figlak, but come on, man. That's Michael Figlak. Like, Herbert has a million times more UFC experience than whoever the hell Michael Figlak is. So, not very good takedown defense, like you mentioned, just 56%. But if he can keep this standing, I don't mind a little bit of Herbert at 7,500, just a little bit. But then again, if this goes to decision, I don't want to have too much of Ziam either, just because it's just going to be wasted salary way up at 8,700. So I'm going to have to ask myself if, do I think Ziam can win this fight inside the distance or somehow score enough to pay off a pretty high salary this week with 28 other fighters on the card. I just don't know, man. He has not proven it yet. So that's definitely weighing on me for sure. The pick is going to be Ziam, but so far he's only controlled 31% of the grappling time he's involved in. I know we said he's been out grappled, but I might just have to see it first before I can really go hard on rostering him.
He's plus 210 to win inside the distance. It's not pretty.
We both said it. I think it's important to harp on for a second. And I mentioned it a few times. There's 30 fighters on this card. There are 15 fights. That is 25% more than usual. It changes the game a lot. I think a lot of people ignore it and just kind of keep, if you keep your same strategy on a 15 fight card, you're going to get fucked unless you happen to hit a dart. It changes, you know, there's really Ross, they're small lineups. It's not like a football lineup. It's not like an NFL lineup. You got position everywhere and more guys in it. It's much more similar to if you play DFS NASCAR. So a little bit more on that. The problem is there's a lot of guys in NASCAR you can start Xing out too, even in the 40 racer field. 15 fights versus 12 is a massive difference. You need to take some stands. You just do. And I'm not saying this is the place to do it. I want to harp on the point. 30 fighters versus 24, or even there's plenty of 11 fights card, which is 22 fighters. Huge difference in terms of strategy.
All right, up next, we have got another close fight here. Lerone Murphy taking on Josh Koulibaly. Murphy, a minus 140 favorite with the comeback on Koulibaly plus 120. The fight ends inside the fight. Oh, let's go. Fight goes the distance, Sniper. Not ends inside, but goes the distance, minus 175. So we are looking at a fight that is almost 2-1 to go to decision. Really a couple of strikers here. I don't know if I think we're going to see a ton of ground. The UFC, Koulibaly has not attempted any sort of grappling, and he's got really good takedown defense. So, Sniper, I think this one plays out on the feet. How do you see it going down?
So Koulibaly grabbed a submission last time out. He was opportunistic and jumped on a sub. But yeah, in general, he's not looking to grapple first. But he showed he can do it. Look, this is a close fight. I kind of think the line is off, quite frankly. I have this as just a straight pick'em. Like, toss a coin, and I kind of lean towards Koulibaly anyway. I'm surprised the line is where it was. If Koulibaly actually were to choose to grapple, I think he could have a lot of success here. And maybe that submission last time out will be what gets him going that direction. I kind of doubt it, but I think if anyone's going to grapple, it's going to be Koulibaly on the feet. I think Koulibaly is... Lerone Murphy's hand speed's probably a little bit better. I like Koulibaly's toughness and ability to stay in the pocket, though. And that's why it's a coin flip fight. Give me the underdog. Again, it's 8,800, right? That's a lot for that line. I'm not a fan. There's better place to go. And Koulibaly being a live dog, he's the one I have interest in. He's the one I'll take for my pick.
Yeah, I don't know how I can justify paying $8,800 for Lerone Murphy this week. The guy's DraftKings stats leave a lot to be desired. He's averaging just 82.5 points per win so far. And if like you said, Sniper, if this is a 50-50 fight, which I lean more towards it being that than what it currently is, I'm going to take Josh Koulibaly at 7,400 a lot of the time instead of Murphy. You know, he's nicknamed the Miracle, and honestly, it was a miracle that he still has an O next to that, you know, in that loss column after that fight against Gabriel Santos when he got taken down 5 times, controlled for over a quarter of that fight. The Amir Khani win knocked him out in the second round with a flying knee. The second round just started, 82 points, 82 at 9,300. What a letdown. 59 against Douglas Silva de Andrade, who was probably like 65 years old at the time. Yeah, I'm just not excited about paying 8,800 for Murphy. I'll be picking Koulibaly straight up, honestly. I like how he looked against Melsick. And I'm waiting for that one to pop up in the L column for Lerone Murphy. And I think Josh Koulibaly's got an okay shot at it this week. And at 7,400, a win's not going to guarantee him any kind of optimal placement because he's an even worse scorer than Lerone Murphy. He's less than 2 points a minute in his last 5, just 70 points a win over his last 3 wins. So it is a much better salary than 8,800. But I don't expect either of these guys, honestly, to make the optimal lineup. So I'll be fading this one, picking the underdog, and hoping that he wins.
Yeah, I think Lerone will win this fight, but I don't think you could play that on DraftKings at all in his price. Koulibaly is the correct DraftKings play. You can't, 7,400, Sniper, you said it yourself. This is close to a pick'em. They'll probably lean towards the hometown kid. Fine. Lerone has more impressive wins in my mind than what Koulibaly has. You know, Lerone beat... he's got a real win against Ramos, right? And you know, that's a real opponent that's good. Douglas Silva, the Andrade. I mean, Lerone Murphy's wins are just more impressive than Coulibal. Coulibal's kind of a little bit beaten up on Cairns. So I do think Lerone will win, but I just, you can't justify the scoring based on the salary. You just, it's dog or pass on DraftKings, and Coulibal could definitely pull off a decision here. A low scoring one where he only puts up 60, but a decision win potentially. So a fight to avoid on DraftKings or dog or pass with Coulibal at plus 116 for 7,400. The line odds value is too good here to pass up fully. All right. Next up, we've got Daniel Marcos. Ooh, taking on
wrong order here.
Wait, are we going Roberts first? No, Marcos was right. You were on it. You were on the right one.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I was looking left to right. God damn it. That's terrible.
You were on the right thing. You're messing me up. All right. Daniel Marcos taking on Davy Grant. Marcos minus 150. Comeback on Grant plus 130. You see the DraftKings salaries there. They're a little more appropriate for the odds, I would say. As far as the inside the distance odds on this one, it's minus 115. So it is a pick 'em to go to decision / go the distance. And man, Davy Grant has been the man. You don't want to go against Davy Grant, but Daniel Marcos, up and coming prospect, looks really, really good. I think this is a tough fight to call. Davy Grant's usually losing until he just knocks you out or does something. He's just been on a career resurgence late. So Sniper, I don't know. Do you have a strong feel on this one? Because it is a close fight to me. And Grant seems like a prospect buster, but Marcos looks like a pretty good prospect.
Yeah. The only prediction I have for this fight, the only strong take I have is violence. I think both of these guys like to move forward and throw bombs. I think they're going to stand in a phone booth and trade. And Davy Grant, submitted Rafael Sunsau. Good. Great. Sunsau's a different style of striker, so I'm taking the volume out. Although Grant did knock down a Sunsau in that fight. He's old, though. But, plenty of volume against Luis Smolka. He was to a split decision win against a loss against Adrian Yanez. Fight of the night performances against Marlon Vera. Plenty of volume, plenty of striking. Beat Jonathan Martinez, who we all like. He's developed into a really solid striker. Daniel Marcos, though, moves forward. He is a violent, violent guy. He's 14-0, doesn't know any better. They're going to stand and trade. I lean towards Davy Grant. It's not a strong lean, quite frankly, but I like this fight to score. It's one of my favorite mid-range fights. It's, I think, one a little bit later we're going to talk about. But in terms of the mid-range, there's no grappling. I don't think it's going to matter. I think the winner of this fight is, if they don't get a finish, worst case scenario, I think you're looking at 90 to 100 strikes. And yeah, it doesn't, and that's still that 70-75 range.
That'll get you
but
there.
It's not a lineup killer. Yeah, it won't be optimal, but I think there's going to be violence. I think there's going to be volume. I think there's going to be fun. There's mid-range salaries. I like it. I would not go anywhere fucking near this for cash games. This is one of my, if you can't tell, I'm looking forward to watching this fight. Probably the most in the card. This is probably the fight I'm most excited to watch, other than maybe I want to see the potential shit show / the intrigue of Paul Craig, Andre Muniz. Like I'm interested in that. But I mean, Aspinall, yeah, great prospect. But he's gonna smash. McCann's probably gonna smash this one I like this fight a lot.
Yeah, same. The price tag is really a great combo to go with the names that we're getting here. I mean, if you don't like Davy Grant, I don't know what's wrong with you. Marcos looks decent as well. Unfortunately, we only have a few minutes worth of time here, 7 minutes against Simon Oliveira. So this is a good step up. We're going to see where Marcos is. I'll be rostering the shit out of this fight. I mean, Grant, he's only lost in his last five to Adrian Yanez and Marlon Chito Vera. I mean, he scored almost 6 points a minute, or 6 strikes landed per minute against Martinez, 5.5 against Chito, 6.5 against Yanez, 7.5 against Smolka, and then 4.5 against Asuncao here. He scores okay, especially for his current salary at 7,700. So I like a lot of both sides of this one. Like Sniper said, this is definitely one I'm going to be targeting. And really quickly, let me drop some of what I call the salary voodoo on you. This is a great fight to target. 7,700. These two salaries actually fought each other 100 times since January 1st of 2021. with 7,700 being optimal 31% of the time, 65% when it wins. Average ownership is just 24%, guys. That means we are under-owned to the $7,700 salary by an average of 7%. It's a fantastic salary to play. So is 8,500. And look at the guys we have at these prices. So I would definitely be targeting this one. I'm hoping for some violence. Either way, we should see a ton of strikes per minute and some really exciting stand-up. So give me Grant for the pick. And yeah, I'll have both of this. I don't want to miss out on either side of this one.
I am picking Grant as well. A little underdog win action. I just love the kid. I just like him. He reminds me of like a British dude that gets into fights after the pub. You know how there's all these like, you always watch these videos and it's always like these, you don't think of like, we think of London when we think of England, but like the average British person is more of like, they're violent motherfuckers. Great Britain is some violent, violent white people. And David Grant looks, he's exactly that, except the violence is applied for good, not evil.
Somewhere Ash is watching this, and I want to get his take on that.
He knows. He did, like, these people watch a soccer game and they just get out and they just like, let's just beat the shit out of each other because we're excited our team won. Like, what are you mad about, bro? Your team won. They're like, yeah, now we're going to drink and beat the shit out of each other and it's fun. And that's, oh, okay. All right. That's what you guys do and you enjoy it. That's cool. Listen, I am not here to look at anybody's culture and shit on it. Like, that's what you do. I'm about it. But that's what they do. He just looks like those dudes. He looks like, you know, he'd be a brawler after a soccer game. But he gets to fight in the UFC instead. Apply for good, not evil. All right, moving on. We got Hot Chocolate Danny Roberts taking on Preston Parsons.
This is not Preston Parsons.
What's that?
He's not fighting Preston Parsons.
What, Johnny Parsons? Why is it Preston
Parsons? I put it on Preston Parsons.
What the hell are you doing?
That is a terrible.
Is that a picture of Johnny Parsons or Preston?
No, it is not Johnny Parsons.
What the hell is going on the screen?
Picture of Preston Parsons.
Like, Preston's got a Preston's more badass looking than John. I mean, Johnny's more badass looking than Preston. He's got a mullet. Who in the hell is that?
Where did Preston Parsons? How did that pop up in my?
Don't worry about that. He has taken on Johnny Parsons, not not Preston. Johnny. Johnny got the mullet. Got some muscle going. Tough looking dude. The fight right now is basically pick 'em with Parsons now effectively plus 105. This is really interesting on the betting lines because Parsons is priced a little higher on DraftKings. And I don't really know why, but the line movement to plus 105 just happened. He was slightly favored up until about like 10 minutes ago. I'm just trying to check and look at some line movement trackers to see like exactly when that happened. Yeah, it was really, really recent. But this is basically a pick'em fight. And here's the thing. I mean, Danny Roberts has the worst chin. This dude gets knocked out consistently. So I don't know. It's really weird that he's even 50-50 in this fight. But, you know, I can't trust his chin. He's probably better everywhere than Johnny Parsons from just a visual speed and just overall skill set standpoint. But the dude cannot be trusted. I'm sorry. You can't trust Danny Roberts. He can't stop a takedown. Not to say that Johnny Parsons is much of a takedown artist, but why don't you break it down for me, Sniper, in terms of what these guys do?
Well, I'd be much more interested if Preston Parsons was fighting
Danny Roberts. I mean,
Preston Parsons got a win over Evan Elder.
Have you been researching Preston all week?
No. That was. Preston Parsons got a fight coming up soon, I believe. I don't care about Preston.
Yeah, he's fighting Roosevelt Roberts.
That's right. Oh man, just leaning.
You know this is hot chocolate fighting, right?
Yes, I do know what is hot chocolate fighting, Captain. And you hit on it. Captain can't stay conscious. I did say it in chat. Like, can somebody tell me if Danny Roberts can take a punch? Because then that's going to determine my whole outlook on this fight.
You cannot trust this kid.
Exactly, but just like you said, if he can take a punch, he probably he probably beats Johnny Parsons, and he probably gets a finish at some point. But then again, his UFC finishes, I was looking real quick, it's Oliver Enkamp and Zalim Imadov. I think that's his only finishes in the UFC. God, oh no, and Nathan Coy in 2015. God, he's been around forever. 7-6 in the UFC. I don't have any faith in him. I just don't. I think I lean towards Parsons. Mostly I like Parsons more because his path to victory is Roberts is gone, and Parsons connects early and puts up 130 points. It's totally reasonable in this. Like, it's there's plenty of outcomes for it. I think my notes might actually say some insight to it. I think I actually picked Danny Roberts because I think he's the better fighter. But the better DraftKings play is Johnny Parsons because of the upside I just mentioned. I love our members, but I love our members who read all the notes and go through it. I think we both have said it. I think Roberts is better, but I don't know he stays conscious. So that's sometimes that's how it is in MMA. You gotta play off the outcomes. It's a high variance game.
You can't be overly confident in an outcome. Think of it like NASCAR. You mentioned NASCAR, like cars are great, and then they crash, and then whatever you thought doesn't happen. Monk, this one's -175 to end inside a distance. I mean, what do you think here? Is this a fight to target heavily on DraftKings?
I mean, you got to throw the stats out the window for this one. These guys are abysmal, both of them. I mean, Parsons, if you put scoring to his Dana White Contender Series fight over Renfro, he would have got that dub with 52.5 points, like a point and a half per minute. Like, what, he got knocked down. Roberts has an even worse chin statistically, barely scores 2 a minute. Like, these 80 points a win, these stats are all awful. I will say Roberts has been finished in half of his UFC losses, so that is interesting here. So normally, yeah, I'm fading the shit out of this fight. But this week, I am absolutely not. I am looking for sloppy. I am looking for violence. And I'm looking for one of these dudes to do exactly what they do and get knocked the fuck out. So I lean Parsons, probably because his nickname is the Sluggernaut, and that's freaking awesome. Hot Chocolate, also a good nickname for the record. But it's no Sluggernaut, all right? But yeah, I don't trust Roberts. I don't trust Parsons. I'm going to want some of both sides of this one, but I just have that feeling like you guys were saying, or at least Sniper was. I don't remember what you said there, Geek, but I'm just leaning Johnny Parsons, man. I don't know why. I have no good reasons. Roberts is the veteran, like a million fights in the UFC, like you mentioned, but something about his chin just, man, I'm not going to go crazy with my ownership. It's not going to be like Davey Grant and Marcos like we just talked about, but it might be pretty close.
I'm concerned. I don't think I can load up on this fight. One thing I do say, though, I do think is if Hot Chocolate has a great first round and is all of a sudden -300, -400 on the betting lines, I'm going to take the other side just for the possibility of that, you know, the knockout that could come at any moment. I think Roberts is a much better fighter. So can he win?
I probably agree.
Yeah, like he's significantly better. It's just, can he hold up? Don't know. Too risky. Don't know what to really do on DraftKings here either. I think you just take a little bit of each side. And like, let me put it this way. In my expensive lineup that I'm putting $333 on, I'm not messing with this fight because I have no idea. And it's like, skip it. Even the underdog's not cheap enough to make me go crazy. So I'm not taking a 50-50 shot in a big money lineup, you know, and if you're trying to win the tournament, you got to have exposure to both sides because more so the Parsons side. I don't think Roberts is that big of a finisher, but Parsons, if he gets a finish because Roberts has no chin and you don't have it, you're probably not getting paid. So you're probably not winning the tournament. All right. Next up, Mark Diakasey. Taking on Yoel Alvarez. Alvarez -195. The comeback on Diakasey +165. The fight ends inside the distance is a solid -220. And this is an interesting stylistic matchup because Diakasey, who at one point I thought was a striker, recently has just been very grappling heavy and going for lots of takedowns. And Yoel Alvarez likes that. He wants to get taken down. Like he is a tried to submit you off his back kind of a guy. So Sniper, are you seeing it the way I am? Like, I think Diakite probably will go for a takedown, and Alvarez will willingly allow him to get one. And then,
yep.
Is this it's kind of like the Muniz Craig fight a little bit, but maybe not.
No, I don't think that, because I think Craig is not going to mess around down there right away. Whereas I think Diakite is not going to look. Relying on subs off your back is a terrible game plan in the UFC. It just is. And I know it's been working for Alvarez. I've been shitting on Joel Alvarez since he got to the UFC, and now is no time to stop. Look, he's live for that.
You're keeping it going.
I'm keeping it going. Because look, what it does allow him to do, which I did underestimate, is that he's so comfortable off his back and willing to do it. He marches forward and he throws with volume. Most of these BJJ guys, when they have that, they're not as aggressive on the feet as he has been. And that has been kind of has separated him. And then he's able to find these submissions off his back. Look, could he submit Diakite? Sure. I'm not going to let Joel Alvarez beat me again. Like, this is a good fight to target, but I'll be over on Diakite, I think, because I want to see ownership. Well, I love this fight. I finished my research earlier today, and then I start kind of poking around what other people are saying, and everyone's fucking picking Mark Diakite to get takedowns, wrestle him, the 0% takedown defense. And now I'm starting to see everybody picking him, and I'm going, oh, God, I was hoping I was going to be in somewhat of a sneaky spot. Doesn't appear to be. He is going to be the most popular underdog on the card by a lot. So I want to see what the ownership comes in at when I mess with during the VIP show tomorrow.
It's just so cheap, $7,200. Yeah. For a plus 165 that is going to get some takedowns.
And the high inside the distance prop. Like this fight likely ends up on the optimal. So I'm going to be on it. I'm going to have a ton of it. My official pick is Diakite, and VIPs, make sure you watch the VIP breakdown tomorrow. We see how we're going to attack some of these tournaments, because I need to see ownership for that, because it's going to be important.
Monk?
Yeah, I feel the same, except, I mean, I've been on DKC all week. Like, Alvarez, obviously, 0% takedown defense. I mean, he wants to be there working subs off his back. He's doing nothing other than that, though. And if this is going to go one of two ways, it's going to be early sub for Alvarez after DKC takes him down. And hopefully he pays off that salary. He did against Moises, scoring 106 at 72. He was 9K against Yakovlev, scored 92. 6,900 against Duffy, scored 97. 8,500 against Bellawater, scored 96. So the scores are not where you want them to be for who should be a pretty one-dimensional guy for the most part. Meanwhile, Diakite, this is not Michael Johnson. He is going to go for takedowns. And if all he has to do is not be like have show some fight IQ and not get subbed, at least right away. If he does that, he will land takedown after takedown. He will have tons of control time, and he'll have a ton of ground and pound too. And if you have those three things, you're likely making the optimal lineup at a ridiculously low 7,200. So while there is a chance for Alvarez to finish the fight early, I mean, the upside for Diakite is by far the highest on the card. I mean, it's not even close. I mean, in his last five, or actually in his last two wins, he's averaging 115 points, put up 119 against Slava, and then 112 against Hadzovic, and that's when he is deploying the wrestling against guys who get taken down, and that's exactly what Alvarez is. Whether, you know, what he does after he's been taken down is beside the point. Diakite's going to land these numbers and have these points. So big time targeting this one. I prefer Diakite. I'm picking Diakite straight up, and I will be talking about him towards the end of the show.
I don't know if that counts. He's high owned for that. Boo, boo hiss.
7,200.
I'm allowing it. All right. Next up, we've got another line odds DraftKings situation here. We got a situation. Jamal Pogues minus 140, 8,900 on DraftKings. Taking on Michael Parkin plus 120, 7,300 on DraftKings. So in a fight that is effectively close to a pick 'em, we're getting a $7,300 guy on DraftKings. The fight ends inside the distance, a just okay minus 145 here. So we got a sloppy couple of fatties. Don't know who's going to win. Tough call. Neither guy very good. But I got a plus 120 for 7,300 on DraftKings. And that is line odds value right there. I'm trying to see, did this start off? Is there line movement? What is DraftKings doing? There was no line movement here.
So a little bit. The problem is, Why this happened is because there's 15 fights in the card. You got 30 fighters, and DraftKings refuses to price people at the same price. So you can have people at the same price or 5 cents different, and they're going to keep just cascading down the salaries.
It's a weird thing, but you know, it like makes you almost stupid to play the plus 300 when you could get a plus 120 for the same price or about the same. So there's a lot of line odds, interesting value here, and this is one of them. Couple of fatties. Anything really stand out to you, Sniper, about these two guys that says, hey, this one should probably win for whatever reason?
It's hard because Jamal Pogues is so young, but I just like to fight the target overall. I'm on the Parkin side. They both like to grapple. Jamal Pogues is what I think he won 2 fights on the Contender Series, 1 in the UFC, I think. Could be the other way around. But he's won 3 fights that we can track on UFC stats and just look. He likes to grapple. Problem is Mick Parkin likes to grapple too. He can handle himself just fine. He trains out of the Aspinall camp, which is that camp. If you've watched any of the lead up this week, you know, the camp specializes in these big guys. He's got more experience than your average UFC debutant. He's not some rook coming in. Jamal Pogues has not been that impressive. He relies on the grappling, his athleticism, and I think he's got a problem here. That being said, because both guys show the tendency to grapple, and we got a good intent to distance line, and it's a low-level fight, all of these things make me think, damn, I want this fight on DraftKings. It is a good one to target. I'm picking Parkin because I actually think he's just the better fighter, whereas Pogues is kind of raw, and we'll see. I like the newcomer. I like that he's cheaper. I think I'd still be picking if the fight was a straight-up pick him. I just like the fight overall to target. And thankfully, I don't think I have to mess with Parkin in cash, even though some people are going to go there. I'd rather play Feely for the safety because the heavyweight's a little too variant, and I have a little bit, you know, I have some safety there with Feely, although I'm going to explore some builds that have both Feely and Parkin, quite honestly. But don't let Pokes beat you in GPPs. They are heavy. They're grappling heavyweights. Who the fuck knows?
Monk, plus 120.
Yeah, it's like
200, a grappler.
I like the salary here, but let's just look at strength of schedule. Mick Parkins has the worst strength of schedule I've seen in months at 0.37 out of 100. This dude's 5 fights ago, he fought someone who's now 2-28. Then he fought a guy who's 2-6, 7-8, 9-12. Like, this guy's fighting absolutely no one. In his Dana White Contender Series fight, he beat Nevis, who's by far his best opponent, and it's not even close. I can't trust Mick Parkin at all. I don't trust Pogues. So low-level heavies, I'll probably throw some in my lineups, but, man, I don't see why this one wouldn't go, like, all 3 rounds, to be completely honest. Plus, Parkin has only 6 fights professionally. Pogues has double the amount of fights he has, so I do lean Pogues. He has a decent strength. The schedule is actually comparable. It's actually decent for a guy with only 1 UFC fight at 68. But that 37, I mean, come on, that is god-awful. That's like Trayshawn Gore levels of bad, like when he came into the UFC. So, I can't trust either guy. I'm picking Pogues to win. I guess I'll have some of Parkin just because he's so cheap, but I'm not looking to go crazy with this one. I tend to think it goes all three, over finishing inside the distance.
I got to defend my boy Parkin here. Yeah, his strength of schedule at the time, he's got a few cans in there, yes. But his Contender Series fight, you kind of brush by, that guy, Eduardo Neves, will be in the UFC. He's now, the 2 fights later, he's the LFA heavyweight champion.
You're going to see him get wins.
He's the LFA belt is the golden ticket into the UFC. You're going to see him soon. And he got him out of there in 2 minutes.
So I agree. But we're now betting on a guy who's now 1-0, technically. You know what I mean? If you're throwing the rest of that shit out, he's just 1-0.
Well, it's not so, like Pogues has better like competition in terms of like the win-loss record of those opponents. But they also came from like quality MMA. Like this is not – he's not fighting – he's not exactly fighting in a known promotion either.
Like one of his actually, and his nickname is the Stormtrooper. I don't want to play either one of these guys.
When you can't finish Josh Parisian, I go timeout, sir. What's happening?
That's troubling.
Who are you?
And now he's 8,900. It's insane.
Yeah, it's going to be great. But the problem is, I just see whoever wins, whichever way this slap fest goes, it seems like it's going to score well.
Listen, don't ignore the number. Plus 120, 7,200. There's not that much to think about there. You got to play that guy because you don't. They giving you a gift of a pick'em fighter for cheap. That allows you to play the guys we want to play. That allows us to pay up for Aspinall or Meatball or Muniz if we want. That's how you do it. That's how you pull it off. You play the plus 120 and he wins. And then, you know, hopefully it works out. I am not impressed by Pogues at all. I am not impressed by Parkin. So give me the cheaper one because he doesn't need the finish. I don't think Pogues is going to finish. I don't think Pogues is finishing Mick Parkin here. He didn't finish. You're right. That slob that he fought in his last fight, Parisian, he's not finishing this dude. And give me some Mick Parkin at home, the rowdy crowd getting behind him. It's from Wales or one of those places in England.
One of those places.
With rowdy people. Don't fucking speak in a version of English language you could barely understand. He probably comes from one of those places. You know, you hear him talking. He sounds like one of these. You ever hear like Patty the Batty? What the fuck did he? I have no idea what he's talking about. I'm sure Pogues is that way. All right, next up,
Parkin.
We've got Mahmoud Muradov taking on Brian Barberina. Muradov's a -325 favorite in this one, with a comeback on Bam Bam at +255. Mahmoud got that great Dov in his last name. He's got a name that sounds like a grappler. Fight ends inside the distance. A sad and pathetic -130, which is concerning for me. Sniper, -130 inside the distance. I got to pay $9,400 for this guy. Has not, I mean, are we playing this? Why is this fight so close in terms of to going to decision? Bam Bam hasn't exactly been super durable lately.
Because historically Bam Bam has been tough. People are jumping off of the Muradov bandwagon here. I've seen plenty of Muradov picks because he lost to Kyle Barajo and Mir Sharp.
The Mir Sharp one that's more disturbing than the Kyle one.
Right. And I get it, but GM3, he turns up every once in a while against these prospects. He's done it. He can be a prospect buster. So I get the little bit of concern there. I do get it, but this is a perfect, the UFC know what they're doing. It's a perfect build back fight for Barberina. Yeah, he had moments
for Muradov.
For Muradov against Barberina. Muradov, like I don't see where he beats, where he does not beat Barberina. Like, he's just better everywhere. He's more technical. I think he's gonna maybe Barberina out toughs him and out cardios him, but I don't think so. The real concern here is the salary. And I agree with you. I don't -130. I don't think he's gonna steamroll Barberina quickly. I mean, I think McCann and Aspinall and like there's other people I'd rather play in that range. So I think Muradov's ownership is going to take a hit for that reason. I think rightfully so. I know a lot of time to be talking about, oh, game theory, you can go up here. There's 15 fights. I don't know if this is a spot I want game theory on. I think kind of where I'll get some leverage, I think Barberina is going to be higher owned than people think. And that's where I'm going to go. Pause. I'll go ahead. I'll just be under on Barberina, who people are taking a stab at. And that's how I'll get some leverage in this fight. You don't have to have leverage on both sides. I don't think Barberina is as live as he'll be owned. I don't think he's super live for an optimal. I don't think he's going to finish Muradov here. So give me Mahmoud Muradov. Get a win. Not a fight I'm terribly excited about either side of.
Monk, the last name of Muradov, does that mess up your numbers machine, or does it see right past it and like, hey, this guy's got a name, but he doesn't actually grapple?
No, I only track Magomeds, so that's okay. The specific one, not so much the OVs, but yeah, I'm picking Muradov to win. I don't mind him for cash, but there is nothing in the stats that tell me that I want to play him for DraftKings. The guy scores like 75 points when he wins. I mean, he went to decision with Carrico, 80 or 53 points in a win. 53. He put up 96 against Trevor Smith, but he was 9,400. Then he followed that up over Andrew Sanchez, 77 points. All three of those guys probably either around the level of Barbarena or lower than that. So I don't expect, you know, Muradov to get an early like crazy finish and score here. Barbarena took some shots, some absolute bombs from Robbie Lawler. And we saw what he did to Nico Price. Robbie Lawler, I don't care how old he is, he can still bomb. And Barbarena took several Robbie Lawler shots in that first round, weathered them, and then finished him in the second. So I don't think Barbarena is going down without a fight here at all. I'm picking Muradov to win, but as far as DraftKings, I mean, if you know me, you know I love 60 or 9,500 and I hate 6,700. I think it has two wins out of almost 50 fights. I think there's a shot to make it to the third here, but I am picking Muradov. I think he's my least favorite of the 9K guys this week, and it's not even close. I'd rather have Alvarez than Muradov here.
Oh my God. Yeah. Way rather. I think
I was saying I don't even like Alvarez this week. So, I mean, I'll have him rostered, but I mean, I'll roster him way more than Muradov for sure.
This fight is almost dog or pass scenario. You know, outside of the flash KO, there's nothing that Muradov is dishing out that's worth 9,400 on DraftKings. I actually think this could be a split decision fight too. I actually think this has the chance to just be a nasty split decision. Each guy lands in the 80, 85, SIG strikes range. No one's going to score that well. But if you have the underdog, at least you're still in the game. If you got the favorite and you're getting an 80, you luck into a split 90, you already know I'm not winning. What else is on TV today? So that's not a good scene at all. Give me dog or... We've got another one coming up here. Ladies, it's Ketlin Vieira taking on Pani Khanizad. And again, take a look at these salaries relative to the price. You want to talk about the ultimate cash play on the card. It's Pani coming in at plus 130, 7,100. Ketlin, again, very expensive for a minus 150 fighter. And this fight to go... Let's see here. We got fight goes the distance, an incredible minus 290. So this fight is set up to go to decision. We got a plus 130 female fighter here. You want to talk about your cash game punt. If you didn't want to go with whoever the hell we were talking about,
Philly.
Or a touchy Philly, who is a fine one. Averaging 5.3 strikes per minute in the UFC. She's got really good takedown defense. Ketlin averaging just 3.2 strikes per minute in the UFC, meaning if all goes as average, Pani should outland Ketlin Vieira and win this fight by decision for 7,100. What do you say, Sniper?
Agree. I prefer Feely to Khanizad in terms of cash game punt because I think he's got more upside in the win. Like, I think Pani, if she wins, could still score like 49 points. Quite honestly. A bit
much, but she's probably in the 70 points zone.
I don't think it would be a good win regardless. And it just, I think the line's off. I think Vieira should be a bigger favorite. She lost to, and she's lost to Raquel Pennington and Yana Santos and Irene Aldana. Like, I don't know. I think she's better than Pani. I guess it could be a
kind of. I think Pani beats Irene. Like, I think it's the same.
Is she better? I think so. I don't know. It's one of those. I have no interest. Put it this way. I'm picking Vieira. I do think she's better. But DraftKings, I'm not playing her. And I'll mix in Pani for the line value. You could play her as a cash punt. I think it's fine. She's the better DK, the DraftKings play. I think there's a little bit of line value on Vieira. I do think she's a little bit better, but the DraftKings value is clearly on Pani.
I don't think you could play. I mean, Monk, you tell us, but I think you actually can't play Ketlin on DraftKings at this price. Like, what is she going to do?
It's hard.
Well, I just said Muradov was my least favorite. we'll say second least.
Yeah.
We'll say second least. Honestly, the line value is the only reason I'm playing any of this fight at all, and it will be a bit of the panty side. These women, the highest they've scored. I mean, Panty scored 80 and a half against Lena Landsberg, who's like probably 40, 41 years old maybe, has not looked good recently. Vieta scored 83 against Misha Tate. These are the highest scores they put up in their past 10 total fights, you know, five each. I am not interested. Like, from a points perspective, I could care less about this fight. This is a make some food fight. This is a go do something else, whatever you need to, you know, smoke break fight, make a drink, whatever. 81 points per win for Vieta in her career, UFC career. 76 and a half. You nailed it in the 70s for Pani Khianzad in her career. Yeah. 7,100, obviously I'm interested in that a little bit. Not at all for 91, Ketlin Vieta. I just, yeah, just going to be a big pass. The only thing, I mean, 93% takedown defense for Vieta is notable. Both women are around 70 to 75% head strikes, about 8% leg strikes. You know, I guess give me Vieta for the win, but Khianzad for DraftKings.
Yeah, I made the same sandwich joke somewhere in my notes, but the pacing has been so bad again. You have plenty of time to take a shit and make a sandwich. Don't do it during a fight.
Yeah, listen, totally agree. It's penny or bust in that fight. You can X out, for the most part, Ketlin, from your lineup construction this week. And again, it's just you got to take these line value odds plays in order to afford the big scores at the top. So I'm doing it. But you're right. Penny's upside is about 80.
Yep, and if you're playing a cash and you're starting with like Panty and maybe the Bone Crusher, you got nothing but ceiling, brother.
Yeah, and they can win. Both of them can win their fights. You play that in cash. This would be a really easy championships lineup to make because I'd probably start with DKC, Panty, and then play all these massive favorites. Yeah,
two of those three, DKC, Panty, or Feely. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Now, next up, we come up on an interesting fight. Chris Duncan taking on Yanal Ashmoz, with Duncan coming in at a minus 145 and the comeback on Ashmoz plus 125. Again, you can get Panty for plus 120 at 7,100. Yet, some reason, DraftKings priced this one in that middle zone at 7,800. The fight ends inside the distance is minus 200. It's a big number. Minus 200 to end inside the distance. Now, Sniper, I'm going to throw this over to you initially. Let's talk styles. What does Yanal do? What does Duncan do? And how is it going to work when they're doing it to each other?
Look, Duncan needs to wrestle. And all I can get the picture out of my head is how badly he was hurt on the Contender Series. And he came back. And not the only time he's been hurt in his career. He's constantly getting hurt in the feet. And he manages. He either gets finished or he grapples and wins. And that's why this fight is so good to target at minus 200. He's either going to wrestle fuck Yanal Ashmoz and score big. Or he's going to end up unconscious. And the unconscious part depends when he ends up unconscious. Maybe Yanal does it second round, third round, score 70, 80. And it's not optimal. But more times than not, it's probably early in a big number. We just saw in the Sam Patterson fight. Sam Patterson wanted to grapple against Yanal. I didn't know Yanal Ashmoz had that kind of power. And that was a knockout. That was the one he was still trying to wrestle the referee afterwards when I watched it. Like it wasn't good. And it's one of those two things are probably going to happen. Both of those outcomes score really well on DraftKings. Because I can't get the image of Duncan constantly hurt out of my head, Yanal will be my pick, but I like both sides. Don't fuck around with this fight. This is a great one to target.
Yep, you said it perfectly. I mean, that's exactly the way to play this one. And the salaries are such that you can get to either side. Ashmoz stats for the first fight need to be thrown out because it only lasted like 14 seconds. You know, obviously a little longer than that.
The UFC stats line for Yanal is ridiculous because of how that fight went down. He is not averaging 12 takedowns.
No.
You know, like none of that is real. Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to throw that stuff out here. And you nailed it, Sniper. Chris Duncan's been hurt in several fights. You can go back only like three fights and see it happen probably more than three times while on the feet. So the last thing I will say about this, the salaries being so low and so close together, Obviously, it makes for fantastic DraftKings opportunities. Both salaries, 84 when it wins, finishes, or it makes optimal 56% of the time, which is one of the highest for any favorite salary on the card. And the $7,800 salary when it wins, 71% optimal. So, yeah, like you said, don't fuck around with this one. Put it in your lineups. I completely agree. Pick is Oshmoos for the same reason.
I'm going to pick Yanal as well, but with the caveat that we know so little about this kid. Like, he's fought nobody. He had the 15-second fight in the contenders. Before that, he's fighting in, you know, Ring of Combat and KNO World Tour. And when I say that, these are promotions that exist in some foreign country that, like, some dude put together. These are not even LFA or even Combate or any of that. It's like some weird shit in the Middle East.
You know what you have to pay attention to in the Middle East now? Because I've been watching more tape and compiling links. Anything from Kazakhstan, I know we kind of they kind of highlighted it the last, you know, the last fight we had. There were a couple of Kazakhs in the card and the football stadiums. I went and I watched some more regional stuff for some upcoming fights. And those things are no joke anymore. They're routinely filling out just bananas amounts of seats. So, like, I want to shit on a lot of those Asian places, Middle Eastern, Mongolian, but some of them, I think we have to start respecting, and we're going to know the name of them soon, because the crowds are ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Well, you know, we're doubling the amount of, like, Kyrgyzstan fighters, Tajikistan fighters, all these guys, we're seeing it, like, go from 1 to 3 to 7. It's getting crazy.
We are seeing a lot of that. Yeah, and of course, can't ignore Kazakhstan.
Yeah, exactly. My boy Shavkat.
The king of the stands, Kazakhstan. All right. Next up. Oh, no. Oh,
this is where I made the sandwich and shit comment.
Oh, no. Bruana, Brazil, minus 150, taking on Shauna Bannon, plus 130. That's a gross one. Let's see here. Fight ends inside the distance. An unlikely plus 195, and Sniper, this is as low-level, ladies, as it gets.
Go to Monk. Don't go to me. I don't want to do this fight.
It's low-level, baby. It is low-level. It's not flyweight, unfortunately, but it is strawweight here. I mean, Brazil, everybody was on her in her first fight. She got busted up by Gomez, who hits like a fucking truck.
By the way, the loss looks less bad now. True.
Yep, and she took some time. This seems to me to be a get-right fight. I mean, Shauna Bannon has 5 fights. Let's talk shit about her strength schedule. 54, so, you know, 17 points better than old Michael Porkins, but 54 is not good at all. It is 10 points worse than Brazil. So I'm leaning Brazil. This looks like a get-right fight. 8,600, man. Like you said, this is to an extent a shit and take a sandwich, You know what I'm trying to say. One of those fights, but 8,600.
Can you not combine shitting and the sandwich?
Whatever you do, wash your hands.
Just don't eat in the bathroom.
Guys. Yeah, those don't go together, guys.
Wash your hands.
Yeah, don't combine those things. Like, have a smoke outside.
Yeah,
go have a sandwich. Go take a shit, but not. And it seems we're combining it more than we need to here.
Right. Well,
make some room. You go take a shit. You wash your hands thoroughly. Then make the sandwich. You're hungry. You make yourself a nice sandwich. You come back.
Couldn't you make a sandwich? Like, couldn't you take a shit before the card? Why do you have to leave that?
It happens when it happens, man.
During the fights, eating.
These fights do start at noon. So
this is a noon card, too.
You gotta get up and get going. Right. Get things moving a little
bit. You're on an afternoon shit schedule. I don't know what everybody's shit schedule is like.
the last thing I'll say about this one, we can move on. The only reason I'm interested in Brazil here is, what if this is a get-right fight and she fucking smashes Shauna Bannon? She's going to be pretty under-owned, I think, at 80. Well, under-owned in retrospect, if that happens. I think she'll be pretty low owned at 8,600. I might look to go a little bit over just in case she does smash Mama B here with her 5 professional fights.
She has absolutely finished opponents before. Not that those opponents were any good, but Brazil has the ability to knock someone out. She knocked out her opponent in the contender series with a head kick, Sniper.
Yeah, I agree with Monk's take here. And I've seen some people, again, like I said, after I finished my research, I kind of poke around. I've seen some people on Ben. I think everyone's hopping off the Brazil train a little early. I think it's a little early. Sean Abed is a fine prospect, I guess. But I if anyone's going to bring the violence in the fight, it'll be Brazil. She'll be super low owned. I want to see the ownership when I take a peek tomorrow. That's the one. If I'm going to take a little stab to go overweight, let's see how my ownership shakes out. But it's like a last. It's almost when I'm building lineups if she's the last fighter in. I'm like, maybe some game theory. You know, we'll see. And that's something I'm super excited about. One of my least favorite fights to target on the card. But if you're gonna go over somewhere, I'm also on the Brazil side.
I'm wondering if after last week, like where only the female fighters all put up the monster scores and you needed Aylin and the other female fighter, like both of them put up, like you needed both where they both seem kind of fadey initially going into it. So I wonder if that'll increase ownership a bit here. On,
there was three women's fighters on Optima last week. Norma Dumont was the third.
Yeah, yeah. They were all the women Norma. Were in the Optima last week. So I just don't know. I'm wondering if that will increase things a little bit, but who knows? First fight of the night, though. I think this is one of those fights that, Sniper, you were teasing us about early on, about these all-in kind of fights to get some heavy exposure. Now, that being said, the fight ends inside that this is just a minus 135. You've got Rafael Filho taking on Daniel Baez, and this is effectively a pick 'em fight. And again, minus 135 to end inside the distance. With that being said, you know, there's some, my boy Daniel Baez, 5 takedowns. He loses a decision, but he gets 5 takedowns in his UFC debut. He seems to be a relentless grappler, and I do like that for DraftKings scoring purposes. Filho does not appear to be someone who's got great takedown defense, coming in at 55% overall. So, Sniper, do you think that the numbers are saying we get a grapple heavy Daniel Baez win?
What's weird is that I think people are overestimating Filho because he almost had because he overperformed against Mohamed Makhachev. And remember, Makhachev was hurt, and that, he seems to always be hurt, which is a different conversation.
And that affected his takedown defense as well. Right. It's probably not truly 55. You know, if you're going to go up against Makhachev, it's going to look bad.
He's a little similar God, help me out, top of the card, guy, hey, DK Saver, Joel Alvarez. He's a little similar to Alvarez in that he's pretty comfortable off his back. He will throw up submissions, and that's actually, I think, his best path to victory here. Not that he can't. He's less dependent than I think Alvarez is sometimes. But I think Baez is a better fighter. I think he's got better movement. I think he's a better striker. The problem is he uses that striking to dip into takedown range and get those takedowns. So it's what he's always done. And that's where he can be in a little bit of danger here. It's a good fight to target. It's not one of my absolute favorites. But I'm on the underdog here. Who was the underdog? At least the underdog on DraftKings is now pick'em. So the line, I'm with the line movement. I've been on Baez all week. I got him at like plus 120 early in the week. Not a big bet, small one. I was like, that Filho recency bias doesn't sit right, so I got a plus number. He should just be a little better everywhere, but again, this is a low-level fight. Minus 130, I think there's volume, I think there's takedowns. I'm not going to let this fight beat me. This is not – there's plenty of other early fights I don't have interest in that this fight will not beat me. I'm on the Baez side, though. Good one to target. It's too low level for cash games. Go other places, but Baez is my pick, and just don't get caught in a sub, and I think he wins.
Monk?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we'll keep this one short and sweet. I think this is a great first fight. We're going to be able to learn a lot about both of these guys for sure. Baez showed up very well in his first fight against Hernandez. Like you said, 5 takedowns. If you take the judges out, the stats say he won the fight. Obviously, that's not a thing, though, but still a very close split decision there. Filho looked okay against a very good prospect in Mohamed Makhachev, got taken down 4 times, finished in the third round, late third round there. So I'm excited to see what each of these guys can do. I'm leaning Daniel Baez just because of the performance against Hernandez and the fact that he's $400 cheaper, to be honest. So I love this fight for an opener. Usually I don't like a lot of these opening fights, but I think they nailed it with this one. It's going to set up the card nicely. And way to kick off UFC London. The pick is going to be Baez. And I'll have some of both sides rostered. Like you said, I want to see ownerships. I can't imagine Filho or Perez is going to be, you know, higher than like 25%. That might even be too high with 15 or 30 fighters on the card. So it's not going to be difficult to go over on a side that you like this week.
There we go. All right. And I'm reminding everybody, smash that like button. Make sure you're subscribed to this channel. If you want DFS breakdowns, all sports, all the time. If you want even better breakdowns, even more, you got to sign up at DFS Army. We just relaunched a revamped website. Everything's getting better. Tools improving. So, and we're still priced by far more winners, but priced for the everyman. Average Joes into DFS Pros. You should have seen. Sniper, did you see what went on in NASCAR this past weekend?
I did see what
every single tournament is taken down by DFS Army. Every single one.
I didn't get a chance to play, but I did see that.
You should have played this week, including your boy taking down Cream. I went back and of course back tested my run. I took a fifth place in one of the big contests, the big tournament, and it was the rare time when changing. I was so on, the projections were so on that it was the two uniques that got me. When I changed it back to one, I hit the nuts. Bentman, one of our guys, hit the nuts, did the exact same thing, but one unique. He's like, yep, I checked mine too. When I go to two uniques, I missed it. So I always do two uniques, but man, this time it cost me first place. Still, I'll take that fifth place. I'll take that eighth place. It was a really, really great weekend of NASCAR, and we are smashing across the board. Sign up as a VIP. So kill shots for this card. We are picking underdogs that we think can win and help you win the tournament this week. But Sniper, before I even get to that, which were these fights that you said you were like crazy high on?
Oh, I gotta give it away. I thought I was gonna have you thought them through.
Or are you not?
Oh, sure? No. I thought them through. I wasn't gonna share, but you know what? Anybody still listening at what the 125? Yeah.
This is our crew. This is the fam here watching the YouTube channel. You know, it's our peoples. This is the community.
So it is Mark Diakese and Yanal Ashmo and Joel Alvarez and Yanal Ashmo's and Chris Duncan. Those two fights.
Yeah, I like them. I like them. Of course, the main event as well. I love all.
Main event was three of them. So in my GPP article, in my VIP GPP article, I talk which fights to target. We don't do breakdowns because we do that here and plenty of other places. Why do I like these fights to target? And I rank them 1 through, in this case, 15. And I think the main event was 3.
I like it. All right. So let's get to the kill shots. We need an underdog that's going to help you win the tournament this week. I'll start with you, Monk.
Well, you tell me, are we allowed to do it? 7,200 seems like a dog this week. I picked Mark D. Casey like 2.5 days ago. I still feel the same way. If we can do that, that's going to be mine. I won't say another one out loud in case it's one of yours. But I do have a backup that I really like.
Oh, you don't like mine. You don't like mine.
Popular, but I'm going to allow it. It's a bit of a nutless underdog pick.
That's
but
true.
We are picking winners here. And Diakese, if he wins, will probably be in the nuts. So that is a perfectly acceptable kill shot in my mind.
Let's do it.
Give me the sloppy heavyweight who's got a win over the reigning LFA champion. Give me Mick Parker.
Man, yeah, I love that one too. I love both of these choices. I'm going with Davey Grant here.
That was my backup. That's why I didn't say it. Yep.
I'm going with Davey. Love. But I've got like two others that I like. Of course, you know, I have to. I'm not going to not mention my girl, Panny, as well. So give me Davey. I don't mind Panny. There's a lot of underdogs that are live on this card.
I'm sure you don't mind Panny, sir. I'm sure you don't mind Panny from Sweden.
I like the Swedish lovelies as well. But no, I don't mind Panny. But give me Davey Grant. You know, looking like a soccer hooligan after, you know, the Wales soccer football club, you know, gets a win and they're going out and beating the shit out of anybody who's just walking by on the street. Innocent people just taking a beating.
Just innocent people.
Innocent people. Love it. That's what it's going to be. All right. That'll do it for the kill shot. Aspinall Tabura, load up on Aspinall this week. We will see you guys in the DFS Army Discord talking fights. Sniper's doing a VIP only breakdown tomorrow at some point with more lineup construction strategy. We'll have a Prize Picks. Did you already do a Prize Picks video for this one?
Did not yet. That is probably going to be tomorrow night.
Prize Picks video as well with some Prize Picks plays. So stay tuned. Stick around. Sign up at DFS Army VIP. Do it now before the price goes up because we're jacking those prices. Well, now we got the Proptimizer in there. We got some other things. I think VIP will go up a little bit. Still about half the price of most of the competition. So we're keeping it for every man, but you want to be signed up now. Don't wait for football. We will see you guys next time. Take care, everyone.
Later, guys.